All right.
Okay, let's go.
My phone is off. Okay, cool. Go.
What's up, everyone? This is Sarah Hudson.
And this is Evan Bogart.
And welcome to Right to the Source.
Listen, we all know creativity can be your best friend and your worst enemy. On Right to the Source, we dive deep inside the minds of creative beings to find out how they do it. Today, let's find out how Taylor Parks does it.
So let it go and let's go right to the source.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Evan.
Tell us about our guest today.
Well, this episode's guest, Taylor Parks, has been one of the most creatively dynamic, influential, and boundary-breaking songwriters, recording artists, and creative entrepreneurs of the past decade. A Texan born and raised, Taylor's journey to pop and R&B music stardom took an incredible route conquering musical theater, television, and film before she firmly established herself as one of the music industry's go-to creatives. As a songwriter, Taylor has penned some of the biggest records of the last few years, including Normani and Khalid's Love Lies, Anderson .Paak and Kendrick Lamar's Tints, several songs on each Grammy-nominated albums of the year, Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer and Ariana Grande's Thank You Next. And earlier this year, she continued to pave the way for women in music by becoming the first female songwriter to have three simultaneous Billboard Top 10 songs since 2014. Ariana Grande's Seven Rings and Thank You Next, and Panic at the Disco's double platinum, High Hopes. As a performer, she's taken the stage alongside Ariana, Kendrick, and Anderson, including on Saturday Night Live. And as a recording artist herself, she has released several mixtapes and singles and toured earlier this year with Lizzo. She's the definition of a quadruple, maybe even quintuple threat. Taylor, we are so excited to have you on as our guest and hear all about you and your creative process.
Yay! Yay!
That's good.
Thanks for hanging with me through that intro.
I love this. Like, honestly, like, this is probably going to be one of my favorite interviews of all time. Like, first of all,
That's good energy.
Yeah, like, yeah. Also, like, thank you. You guys are two of my favorite songwriters and creatives overall. So to hear those sweet things makes me feel good inside.
Same. You're one of our favorite songwriters and people. You're so inspiring. So we're happy to have you on here.
Thanks for having me.
Taylor, we start every episode with a segment called A Rose and a Thorn. Mm. Hit it, Sarah.
And we sing.
A rose and a thorn. A rose and a thorn. A rose and a thorn.
Did you love that?
I loved it.
Okay, Taylor, a rose is basically something you're incredibly grateful for right now. And a thorn is something that's literally a thorn in your side and you need to let it go. So we'll start with the rose because gratitude should always come first. And we'll end with the thorn so we can literally sage it away and let it go.
Okay.
Okay. So let's start with everyone's rose. I'm thinking...
Well, guests go first.
Yeah, our guests can go first.
I am extremely grateful right now for a little time off. A little time off for the holidays. I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. What do you have planned? Just to do like nothing and chill, or are you like seeing family?
A little bit of everything. So I have some days where I'm literally doing nothing, and then this like December I'm gonna be going to Scandinavia. I'm gonna go to Finland, see the Northern Lights.
In December?
Yes.
Oh my god, it's gonna be so cold.
Yes, but we've been in like Norway and it was cold as fuck.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel like
December might... Is December colder or February colder?
Probably both freezing, I'm sure.
Oh, my God.
When that man was like, the wind from the north is...
Oh my God. But the Northern Lights.
The Northern Lights. That's just got to be like.
Yes.
That's what I'm on a bucket list for me.
For sure. Yes.
You got to go. You got to go.
Plus, there's something about like coats and scarves and like it's very fashion.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. I love a layer. I love a layer. So like when I can't really do much in LA, it's just like, okay, like we don't want to be too hot. But then you know, you have the nighttime and it gets a little.
I absolutely nippy. Am obsessed with the fact that you said I love a layer.
Yeah.
I love a layer. Who doesn't love a good layer?
Like, no. Like it's true.
And with a good layer, there's a constant reveal. It's like take off one layer, reveal.
And then boom, boom.
Is new another. Layer, boom, 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 boom. Reveal. Boom, yeah. Boom is, by the way, Taylor's catchphrase. So, and now I say it all the time, but we're going to be saying it a lot in this podcast,
yes.
I feel like. Boom,
just
boom.
A warning, yes.
Well, that's an amazing rose. I'm going to say, I have my rose.
Yeah, you go.
My rose is my friend, one of my best friends, Johnny Wujek, who was
I love Johnny.
Who was one of our guests.
He's episode two.
He's episode two. He's a stylist. He did all of Katy Perry's like iconic looks, and like he's just the greatest stylist, creative director. And we really connected. We went to Egypt, a bunch of us, this past month, and we really reconnected. And I don't know. I just love him so much, and he's so inspiring. And we do just weird like art projects together, and like weird like craft nights.
Yeah, what's
and,
the
like,
last craft y'all made?
Well, we have one coming up in December.
Is it a themed craft night?
We're doing a reinterpretation of the nativity of like the manger. I guess I can announce it right now, but we're doing.
It's announced.
So, so it's official. Okay. We're reinterpreting the nativity and we're calling it Club Manger.
Okay.
So like Mary's kind of like, you know.
Wait, where are you doing this?
A stripper. And like Jesus is like an alien and like the three wise men are like leather daddies. Like it's a whole.
So basically. Basically the more factual interpretation of
it. Kind of, basically. No, we're doing it. We're making like a model. Like we're dolls.
Where is it going to be? Where can people come see it?
Where? When?
We're making it in he has like a studio like workspace and we're literally making it. And we want to have like a party and have like a viewing.
Is it LA?
So it's like an art piece.
It's an art piece. It's very, very controversial. Going to be very controversial.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think, not to crisscross episodes, do you think you could get EJ Hill, one of our previous guests, to come stand in the manger?
Maybe.
As a durational performance artist.
That'd be cool. We had an amazing artist, EJ Hill. He's like a performance artist. Mm. What did he do? He stood.
He at the Hammer Museum. He stood for 3 months. 3 months. 6 days
Girl,
a week, nine hours a day.
Oh my God.
Just stood.
Okay, EJ.
So basically, he grew up here in LA in South Central. And so all the schools he went to growing up, he basically, his art piece was he ran around them. For every year that he went to that school, he ran a lap around the school. And then at the Hammer Museum, he recreated a track and field. So he put on the fake grass and like the fake track thing. And in the middle of it was a podium where he stood and he was the winner because he had achieved this this goal of accomplishing this learned path or whatever. And he stood there for 6 days a week, 9 hours a day for 3 months straight, not moving.
What?
And he said people's reaction to it was crazy.
And just, like pissing on himself?
He just didn't go to the bathroom.
He just didn't pee.
He didn't eat, drink, or go to the
bathroom. What happened to his insides after?
I don't know.
Like, whoa, okay, that is really, really.
But he's like famous.
That is
he's like famous for doing this kind of art, this duration.
That is beautiful.
He did one in Harlem where he laid on a board.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Like, that is crazy. I see you, EJ.
So I wanted the nativity scene.
Well, I like that combination, but the nativity is more like a visual art experience, you know?
Right, okay.
Anyway, so the point of this was Johnny is my rose, and we really reconnected, and like I love being like having my inner child just like be playing a lot, you know? And so I feel like some people look at it as like a waste of time if you're like doing things that aren't like for your career or for everyday like productive. Like sometimes you need to just like be freaky and like paint
Completely.
Something or, Completely. You know, and he just brings that out of me. So he's my rose.
Boom, boom.
Boom, boom.
So Taylor kind of stole my rose too, which is basically some time to recharge. I just feel like you need it as a creative, as somebody who does business, just in life. I think that taking time to recharge, I think people, they just get so caught up in working all the time and they don't take time to, like, you know, experience their family and friends and whatnot. And I think, you know, as much as some people might like or dislike the holidays, for me, I love the holidays because it gives me an excuse to do what I've been trying to do anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to the Thanksgiving break and the holiday break. The Thanksgiving break, I just have like rituals, you know, like cooking stuff and then like watching football and then going shopping, going to the movies. Like,
what are you most excited to eat? Like this Thanksgiving. Like,
okay,
you
so have your favorite? I'm making, so I'm mostly vegan. I say that because I eat a little bit of fish, but I'm making, I created last year this Beyond Burger meatloaf.
Wow.
Which in itself is probably not like healthy, quote unquote, but is healthier than if I was just eating like red meat or whatever. Yeah, so, so I'm making my, I self-professed famous Beyond Meatloaf.
Evan's loaf.
Evan's loaf.
Damn, we all have our own. Sarah's manger.
Sarah's manger.
Evan's loaf.
Yes. Oh, Taylor's. Man, I'm going to need some. Taylor's tots.
Taylor's tots. Taylor's orange hair, though.
Yeah. That's no, fun. I wish Thank everyone you. Could see Taylor. Well, you will.
Because
you'll
be taking a pick.
Okay, those are amazing roses. Now, what about our thorns? Is anything going on, any emotion that we need to sage, get rid of?
I think one major thorn, like, and something that's like kind of popped up recently is being like a female in the industry, you're always trying to balance like between standing up for yourself and being like a bitch, right?
That is so true.
And so,
I've just like, had these conversations with Z recently too.
Yeah, like finding, you know, always having that balance. And I'm super chill. Most of the times I'm like getting like walked over, you know, in that regard of being like, you know what? It doesn't really matter. If it comes to something super, super small, but then having to not feel bad when I do have to stick up for myself. You know what I'm saying? I think that that's something that I'm working on is being like, look, don't feel bad if you're just having to stick up for yourself for something that's right. Because I hear all the time, like, well, this is just the way that it's been done. Or this is just the way that we do things. And being, you know, a dynamic songwriter, going from pop world to country world to all of these things, everybody seems to have made up their own rules, right, of how things go. And I'm the person that I don't want to hear it. Like, I don't want to hear it. So making sure that I'm not saying, look, maybe I shouldn't stick up for myself. Those are things that I'm working on with myself right now. And just being like, no, you actually deserve that.
I love that.
You know, so.
Do you think that it would be different? And this is a loaded question because I have my own opinion on it. But do you think that it would be different if you were a man?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Completely. It would be different if I was a man. Completely.
Yes.
You know.
I feel like it's a double standard, and I get to witness it just because my wife is a recording artist, and she will. It's so interesting. We say this all the time. Like, if you rolled up somewhere and you were like a dude, and you had like you were hungover and had like a shit eating grin on, and like you had your sunglasses on and you didn't give a fuck, and people would be like, oh, that guy's so cool. So moody and this and that. But like a woman can't do that.
Like it
comes across, people get like threatened by it, and it comes across like, oh, what's wrong with her? Why is she such a bad attitude?
Right.
It's insane.
It's a crazy double standard.
And it's insane really thinking about it too. Like sometimes I really think about it in my life when in work situations, how many times I've been in a room with guys only or whatever, and how they don't even look at you. Mm-hmm. You can be talking and it's like for some reason you're like ignored. Your opinion isn't relevant enough.
I've been in sessions with Z where she said an idea. No one said anything. Then I repeated the idea 15 seconds later, and they were like, oh, that shit's dope.
Brilliant.
And me and Z look at each other, like, just start laughing, because we know that that's why.
It's insane.
And it's like, and it's a thing of, like, not just making it, like, a man or a woman thing. I think anybody, you know, I think songwriters in general have to put up with it.
Yes.
Because we do get the, like, of saying, no, I actually deserve vocal production credit, or I deserve production credit if my chords are literally in the song.
Mm-hmm.
I actually programmed. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Things like that. So, like, but it is worse because you're a woman, but mm-hmm. it is something that goes beyond being a woman, and that's just as a human knowing that you deserve that.
Yeah, standing up for yourself and being fairly taken care of and compensated and credited and
exactly. I need every if we feel this way, you know, and this is how many years into the evolution of songwriting, then what happens to the songwriters 10 years from now even 5 years from now?
So
we have to start.
I think it's tough. I think it's a hard balance between like getting businessy when you're trying to stay creative, when you're trying to maintain relationships. Some people, you know, I think some people, especially up and coming songwriters, will get taken advantage of because they don't want to like piss anybody off.
Or, yeah,
like,
exactly.
They want to like toe the company line, and, like, you know what I mean? They don't want to upset the apple cart, whatever.
Exactly.
I can come up with like four or five cliche sayings for you if you want. I can keep going. I don't want to rock
those
the boat.
Good. Those were good enough.
Anyway, but I do. I think on the way up, people get taken advantage of because of that.
Exactly.
Because they feel like they don't want to like upset, you know, any kind of relationships they have or ruin any opportunities. But at some point, you know, it's like you have to understand at some point your time and your efforts and your creative contributions are valuable. You need to figure out how to like put a value on that and stand up for it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like I'll stand up for it and then be like, damn, like after I'm done, I'll be sitting there smoking like, damn, was that too mean?
Right. No. Right.
No, it's like, hard. It's hard to find that balance of like being assertive and being standing up for yourself.
Completely.
But also, you know, doing it in a way that's respectful and that it's just about the business. It's not emotional.
Exactly.
And if you're being truthful and authentic, it's like if someone thinks you're a bitch, okay,
whatever.
That's your problem.
Exactly.
That's their problem.
Exactly.
You know?
He said
it
that.
Is.
He said, that's your problem.
It is.
Facts, though.
Yeah. That's definitely a rose. I mean, a thorn. Damn
it. Well, it's a thorn... turning
but
into
it turns,
a rose.
Exactly. It turns into that because I've slowly over like the years just been like, you know, I'm still very business savvy and still that. But when you like get off that phone after you just stood up for yourself and then you're like, I hope that person doesn't think I'm a bitch now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's not even the way that I said it. It's just the simple fact that I'm fighting for something that is wrong. It's not even me being like, I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to do
crazy.
Any of that shit. It's just I'm going to tell you what my truth is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So what's your thorn?
My thorn is, I guess I would call it like cancel culture. The sort of like, you know, I think,
The social media mob with pitchforks.
Yeah. And I think like I think social media is amazing and it's life changing and it's where it's our platform for so many amazing things. Our podcast, our music, our expression, all of it. But it's also just, as we know, a platform for anyone to have an opinion on anything. And that mob mentality, that sort of like cancel culture, so quick to just fucking knock somebody down. And, you know, I haven't really been like a subject of it, but in some ways with like Katy Perry albums or stuff, like people or songs, people would come for me and be like, you suck, you bring this person back, you're ruining her, like all these crazy things. And I'm like, what? Like, I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? You know, I can't even imagine being like a real target or a real subject for this. But I just think it's a shame. And I don't know, I really hate it. And it's such an easy platform for people to hate.
Completely. I just think mob mentality in general is I mean, that's terrible.
That's exactly what's going on. Like, you see artists getting bullied every single day. Like, this person is canceled. Like, and it'll be over, like, nothing. It'll be over somebody having, like, one bad... Now, sometimes it is over something, and then you deserve to be canceled.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But most of the times, it's literally just them being like, we have so many stars that we can just create a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, everybody's not recyclable. Everybody's not, like, this is a human.
And and I'm also like, what about just human behavior? Like, we all make mistakes, we all fuck up, we all, you know, it's like, where's the compassion?
Well, I feel that. Like, how long do you need to, like, not repent, but, like...
Yeah, you don't need to be perfect, and nobody is perfect. These people's imperfections just happen to be on display. Mm-hmm. And what about all your imperfections? You just don't have enough people that care about those imperfections to cancel you.
exactly. No, that's so true.
It literally, because you're all fucking up somewhere. Like, somebody hits that you, like, they would probably cancel somebody for forgetting to leave the toilet seat down, like, for literally. Up or whatever. Like, it's just cancel.
If that was
exactly. Like,
I'd be canceled for leaving dishes in the sink.
I mean,
literally, and the same motherfuckers at home leaving dishes in the sink will be like, "Are you really leaving dishes in the sink?"
Canceled. Exactly.
I don't know what it is. It's like the dishwasher's right next to it. Why can't I take the extra 2 seconds to put it in the dishwasher?
You know? Definitely facts.
Well, you're canceled. Sorry.
Canceled.
Yeah, so that's the thorn.
Yeah, I feel you on that.
I don't like it.
No, same. I don't like it either.
Same. It makes me feel weird, and I don't like it.
That's,
yeah.
That's,
I don't know.
You know?
Because then who's going to live truly, like, real if they feel like the moment that they show the real them that they'll be canceled?
That's
who's going
to
really be authentic? And in a time where the trend is authenticity,
boom,
you know what
boom,
I'm saying?
Boom.
Everybody's pretending to be authentic, which is the craziest, weirdest, Black Mirror shit in the world.
And that shit really trips me out because I feel very, like, I'm very, like, expressive and bold and whatever. Like, my humor is a little crazy and, like, whatever. But and sometimes I want to just express that, but I don't because of fear that that mob mentality. Not that I'm even, like, a person that people would come for. But putting yourself out there in a way of, like, okay, so am I authentic in every way online? Do I put myself out? No,
that's because some real shit.
Because I can't. I don't feel like I can't be. It's just it is a real fucking double-edged sword. The whole, like, be authentic, be truthful, be yourself. But wait, not too much.
But
or
not too much.
We'll
you're gonna
fucking
get
cancel
that.
You.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's fucking.
Oh man, I just
fucked.
Took on both of your thorns.
Well, that's okay. We all share thorns.
And it's a good conversation to have because it makes you feel like, oh, okay, I'm not fucking crazy, and seeing like this is something that's all something that everybody is evolving through.
Oh,
exactly.
Man. Well,
and we're gonna sage them away, and then they'll all be gone.
Anyway. Okay. Well, my thorns is expectations.
Right.
Having expectations and not being open to, like, the universe creating what's supposed to happen and just kind of being set in my ways of things that are supposed that I think things are going to happen a certain way, and then inevitably they never do, and so I get disappointed and I get down and it puts me in kind of a hole, and I just, like, I know better. I know expectations breed resentment and change is inevitable and all these other things I can tell myself, but I still get so excited about certain things sometimes. And we do, it's just as creatives, we get excited about a song coming out or something, and someone's like, this is going to be the first single, and it's not on the album or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, things like that happen all the time, right?
Oh, but literally. Like,
but I keep having these expectations in business and people, and I for some reason, I can't learn this lesson. So hopefully, I feel like if maybe we could sage it away, it won't come back. It's the one thing I haven't tried, saging away expectations.
Let's do it.
Yes.
Honestly, it's so true, though. Expectations are like, I was saying to Evan earlier, it's like kind of a dark quote, but hope for the best, expect the worst. Yes. I don't think expect the worst, but it honestly says, like,
be prepared for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, and it's like, I hope this does dope shit,
but if it doesn't,
okay.
It's all good.
That's it. Expectations are a killer.
I feel like this could have even been, like, one of my thorns earlier in the season, because I just feel like I'm always running into this.
I mean, I feel like we do in life, just, like, over and over
again. It's a part of what allows you to dream, like, the thing of the possibilities. You know what I'm saying? So those expectations are both the rose and the thorn, because those expectations are also what pushes yourself to try to receive those things that you desire, you know? And even if you don't, again, like, it's like the reach for the stars, you land on the clouds. Even if you don't, you're fine, you know? But it's also, you have to want something in order for you to drive towards that.
That
you know?
Is big T right there.
Taylor's a Jedi.
From Lil TT, okay? Literally, it's true. It's like, I always talk about, too, as songwriters or creatives or whatever we want to call ourselves, that we always have to dream and be dreamers, but a lot of the business is rejection. No, mm-hmm. you're not good enough. You're mm-hmm. not good enough. You're not good enough. And you have to develop this like thick skin.
Totally.
But also when you lose that like sense of dreaming and being a dreamer, it's like you're just fucked.
Yeah.
Like we have to stay in that balance.
And it's such a hard balance, but that's what life is.
Yep.
So
yep.
Whatever. We're all here.
So
let's sage these fuckers.
Evan, light the sage. Evan is lighting the sage, and we're just going to take these thorns, and we're going to sage them away. Yes.
Wow. Yes, this is the best.
You know?
Sage these motherfuckers.
Mm. Mm.
I've been lighting sage.
Constantly?
Constantly, yeah. And incense and Palo Santo. Yes. My house smells amazing.
Love it.
Yes.
You just have to, you know?
Yes, I have a little rack. It's like a little baby rack that has each of those things on there.
Mm-hmm. It's your toolkit.
Yes.
Taylor, let's dive into the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to, you're from Dallas, right? Mm-hmm. Born yeah. and raised, Dallas. Yeah. Yeah. So what was your first memory of being creative? Like, anything, painting on the walls, singing a song. Like, what was your very first memory of being creative?
One of my very first memories would either be out of, like, just singing at the piano in my church with my grandmother. Like, literally just me and her. She literally had a church built on her house. And my mom was in the army, and, like, I would go to her house for summers.
Wait. A church built on her house.
Onto her house. Like, she loved the church, and she had a lot of land in Louisiana, and my mom would, you know, go to work, you know, and she was doing her thing. I would just go there for the summers, and, you know, it would be...
Full church.
Full-blown church.
How old are you then?
I was maybe, like, six. Like, I was very young.
And you started singing just... Did you just start singing? Like, you're like, oh, this is a part of me?
My parents told me that they literally picked me up after that, and my grandmother was like, hey, you know, your kid can sing. And they were like, oh, really? and, you know, I guess from then, just having somebody explore that with me, then my parents got really, really just supportive. They wanted to support anything that I did, so I started to be trained. My parents are very, I would say they're perfectionists in the way that they're like, they want you, if you're going to do something, be the best at it.
I love that.
So they put me in training. I was singing in Italian. I was learning all of the,
wow,
the foundation of what being a singer means, right?
So was that sort of your first introduction? Because you're an actress, you did musical mm-hmm. theater, you've done all of it. Like, was that your first introduction into this world, singing?
Completely. So, like, the music was always the thing that was just, it came natural.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once the box was unlocked, it was like, okay, my parents got me a karaoke machine. And then I went through, like, what makes sense now. I was listening to the Brian McKnights, the Babyfaces.
Mm-hmm.
People that were actually, now I look back on it, and I'm like, oh, I was listening to singer-songwriters. These people were writing for other people, but they were also artists. At the time,
I had no idea at the time, right?
You know? Yeah.
That's what
I gravitated towards.
That's cool.
You know? And then I meet Debbie Allen, and Debbie Allen, like, I used to have, like, two left feet, and my best friend
How'd you meet her? Like, that, she's a legend.
I went to her dance class, so my best friend was like, come to me to dance class or whatever, like, you know, you gotta get it together, and so I went
in
there.
In Dallas?
Yep, and it's because Debbie is from Texas.
Okay.
And so she came back, and she basically was like, you know, she used to do these things, and she still does them to this day, actually, these plays that she put on at the Kennedy Center, and she basically, like, did the Nutcracker and, you know, all of these different versions, and she teamed up with Steven Spielberg. And so probably 9 years old is when that happened, and she was like, yeah, you know how to sing, but can you dance? And can you act? And I was like, I've never acted in my life. And she handed me a book and told me to read each character as if I were them. So the book was called Dancing in the Wings. And it was like one of my first introductions to this world. So from like 9 to 11, I was at the Kennedy Center, and Diana Ross and Will Smith and all of these people were coming through. And that was my first
wow.
introduction to kind of this
That's amazing.
Dancing and singing
that
vibe.
That is amazing. And then so from there, what did you, were you like, I want to go on auditions, I want to, what was like sort of your thought process?
Well, eventually my, like, Debbie Allen convinced my parents, like, yo, you should give this a go and, like, take your kid out to L.A. You know, they let me go with her for a summer and do her summer intensive. And then my parents ended up just saying, you know what, we're going to pick up everything. And we ended up moving to L.A. And
wow.
That was crazy. And in the beginning, I didn't have an agent. My mom used to, like, scour the internet for auditions, and I would just show up. Like, I didn't have an agent.
So, how you were not between 9 and 11 at Kennedy Center,
mm-hmm.
and then and
after
then,
11 was when I moved.
You moved, so 11 moved
yeah,
to LA.
Yeah, 11 or 12 is when I moved to LA.
Wow.
And like officially was like, okay, this is like I have a career, you know?
Right.
And my mom would just sneak me in auditions, and so I was auditioning for a lot of different things, and then Gilmore Girls is one of the things that changed it all. So
yes.
Gilmore Girls, I got caught, actually. They were like, well, we see you don't have an agent and everything, and I thought I was in trouble. But they were like, you know what, actually, that casting director ended up calling three agents for me, and they were like, you know what, you got the job, but also we're going to get you an agent. And I told each agent, I was like, whichever one just gets me the audition for Hairspray, I'm going to go with you because I just want the opportunity. And all of my friends have been able to audition.
Why were you obsessed with Hairspray?
Because all of my friends have been able to audition. Mind you, I was studying with Debbie Allen. So, you know, I had friends who were like, I had auditioned for Lion King and I got really close. And then I didn't get it. This other girl beat me. And then they asked me to do it again, probably a few years later. And I was too old. I had like boobs and I couldn't wear that outfit anymore. So I was like, okay. The next obsession was, it was like a competition between me and another girl that actually studied at Debbie Allen Dance Academy. And she was an incredible dancer, actress, you know, singer. And it was so interesting. And that's how I knew about this audition. And thousands and thousands and thousands of girls were trying to audition for this role.
For the role in Hairspray.
For Hairspray, yeah. Like, it was an open call. So you didn't even have to, like,
Did you grow up when you were a kid? Did you watch musicals?
No, like, but I was in them. You know what I'm saying?
I watched them from the stage.
No, like, okay. At that point, I had done, like, Once on This Island, which is on Broadway now, and, you know, all of that stuff. And this is a whole life that sometimes I forget about. I forget that, like, I was so young going to the NAACP Awards and, you know, really having this life because once I do something, I kind of move on. You know?
Right.
So I'm just like, I did all of that. And then I spent those few years, probably 12 to 17, just kind of wrapped up in acting, you know?
But wait, I want to just go back to Hairspray because that was such an iconic moment.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like you were like, I need to audition for this. So whichever agent's going to get me this audition.
Yep.
So you went with that agent, I'm assuming.
Yes, I went with that agent.
And then what? You went to the audition for it?
Yep. It was like a series of like
and how old
four,
are you?
Four different calls. I was 12.
Okay.
It was like four different like callbacks that we had to go through. And it was a series of like just months. And I thought that I didn't get it because they took really, really long time. You know, to reach out. And I remember my mom, literally, we were in the house, like, at the time we were living in Pomona. And literally, my mom comes upstairs. She's like, literally just so, so ecstatic, you know? And just, like, excited that, like, this hard work, you know, that I put in was, you know, paying off.
And what did she say? She's like, you got it?
She's like, you got it, you know?
Oh, my God.
And she's just like all crying and excited. You
was
know?
That experience? So was that experience just like a major moment for
yes,
you?
Yes, completely. And it was something really, really motivating. You know, at the time, like I had started being probably surrounded by a lot of like young actors and actresses and things like that. And so as a kid, you're like, oh yeah, my friends are starring on TV shows, you
right,
know, or they're
right.
You know, starring in films and things like that. And again, it's one of those things that you don't want to put too much into it, but that's actually what allowed me to grow tough skin.
Sure.
Skin that, like, a lot of, like, my musician friends, like, it's something that comes later on in life because I was literally a kid
mm-hmm.
having to, like, I didn't have, like, the regular childhood, you know? I was
right.
going in auditions as a 12 and 13-year-old being told you're not getting the role hundreds of times a year.
Totally. Well, and it probably, I feel like it gave you probably, like, a sense of professionalism, too, because...
Mm.
To me, you're such like a, you're so inspiring and fun to be around, but you're also really just like, you know, you're a pro. And like, thank I you. Feel that energy from you. And I feel like being so young and such a iconic like movie and moment like that, thank it's you. Just, you have to just learn that so early.
Yeah, definitely. It's a different thing of like when you show up to a set late, it's not going down well.
Right.
You show up to a studio late, it's a completely
right.
different thing.
Totally.
What did you love more back then? The singing, the acting, the theater, the performance of it? Like, is there something that stuck out to you? Like, man, like, I love all of this, but, like, this part of it's my favorite.
I loved perfecting something. So acting and dancing wasn't something that came naturally for me, right? And singing was. So I was just happy I got to sing in the movie. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, look, Hairspray, this is great, but I get to sing.
Right.
Like, I also have to dance and make sure that I'm keeping up with all these incredible, you know, dancers.
Right.
But I was just really happy to sing. And that was just something that I started to fall deeper and deeper and deeper into acting because it was something that became natural after a while until the point where I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to act anymore. I don't want to act on screen because it's taking me too far away from music. And that is what my path is.
So music was always
the
thing. It started with music and it was going to finish with music.
And it was going to finish with music.
Right. So you, from like 12 to 17, you're saying you're acting mostly, right?
Yeah.
And then how did it parlay into music and songwriting and take us on that journey?
Well, probably like when I turned 14 or 15, my dad bought me Logic. And I was like, basically, I wanted to sing, but nobody wanted to write for me or write with me because I didn't want to like sign a record deal. My parents thought I was too young and they didn't want me to get taken advantage of. And so they saw it in the movies, you know? I don't come from a family that's in the entertainment industry. All they know is what they've seen in movies and in E-True Hollywood stories.
Right.
So they basically were like, look, we're not going to sign you as a... And this is also at a time when, you know, you had the Hannah Montanas, you know, the kids that had the show, but also the you know, music career, the Selena Gomez, the, you know what I'm saying? I say Hannah Montana because obviously it was the show, you know, that helped bridge this entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then that started to die off, you know what I'm saying? It started to die off and go into a completely different range. So basically I was like, so everybody sees me as an actress now versus a musician. And now I'm going to have to start all over. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to have to start all over and basically prove that I'm a singer. Then I had to start all over and say, look, if nobody's going to write for me, I guess I have to try to write for myself. And, you know, I happened to be pretty good at it. I was like, okay, let's just get at it. Me and Leon Thomas, who you met at Burnout, actually, and who's now just had so much success. We literally would be on iChat, and he would be teaching me so much about what he knew.
And he was on Victorious at the time?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So it was just so weird how all of these worlds kind of collided because that's also where I met Ariana for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was just all of our worlds were colliding,
so
you know?
Cool.
And then, you know, we all had that same thing of, wait, now we're known as like actresses or like acting kids that can sing or whatever.
Right.
And breaking out of that is so hard, you know? And so then Leon started to work with Babyface. And, you know, after a few, like, years or whatever, he would end up taking me over there. And, you know, Kenny was very interesting in the way that, like, I love to learn from him.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's one of the greatest songwriters of all time, him and Tony Dixon.
You were karaoke singing to Babyface records.
Exactly. So
now you're in his studio.
In his studio. Yeah. And this is like, I'm like, whoa, this is the first like professional, like crazy studio. And you go into this hall and it's, you know, so many feet long. And there's like a sliver of space in between each plaque.
There's plaques everywhere. It's like the whole walls are tattooed with plaques.
Tattooed with plaques, you know? And so this was a very, very interesting time because I lived like an hour and a half out. So I lived in Corona at that time. And I would have to drive, and I was in college, so I would have to drive from there to the studio.
So you went to college?
Yes, which
girl,
is all
what?
It's so crazy thing.
For I was singing or for music or just like
no,
just like
I would be if
college?
I stayed in school, I would have my degree in entertainment law.
Law?
That's what like I
you
was
were studying law.
Like I literally
girl,
was like.
What the hell?
so I didn't finish though. I didn't finish. And basically, like, which is like one of those things where I'm like, oh, I can't wait till I can have some time so I can go back and do it. But I was on the speech and debate team, and I'm a little nerd, you know? And it's one of those things that eventually it got to the point where I was like, yo, I'm writing philosophy papers and I am trying to write songs as well. And this is a lot. Like, this is a lot for me to juggle.
Right.
And then eventually I was like, wow, I didn't get to go to regular high school. So college was like my high school. And I got to meet all of these interesting people. I was surrounded by kids that were on TV shows, not real world.
Right.
Like real life. This is real life. And that was just like, you know, as a 17-year-old kid. And then I ended up like getting into this big thing with my parents about like smoking weed.
Ooh.
And they literally tried to put me on punishment. And I moved out of my house at 17.
Why? Because they like found out you were
they
smoking
found out
weed.
That I smoked weed. I was in college at the time. I was like, you know, working with Babyface and doing all of this stuff. And they found out that, and they were really not happy about
they were
it.
Pissed.
And they were like, you're not allowed to go to the studio. And I was like, what? You mean to tell me? You want me to tell Babyface?
Right.
And
right.
And I moved out that night.
That night, where'd you go?
I literally went to my best friend's house in Pasadena. I went to Kiki's house.
Damn. Shout out Kiki.
Kiki Palmer.
Yeah, Kiki Palmer. Oh, you know
shout
Kiki.
Out Kiki.
So, like, me and Kiki have been best friends since we were nine.
I wrote Kiki's, like, I think, first single, Footworkin'.
Yes, I remember
that title. Okay.
Yes. And so it's literally like, I basically got to the point where I was like, okay, I grew up really sheltered, really, you know, well taken care of by my parents. I never had to ask for anything. And now I had to really prove myself. So now I'm going into the studio with something like, yo, I don't want to go back home. I don't want to prove my parents right.
Right.
I went from being like, yo, I really just kind of sheltered, not knowing how to do my laundry, not knowing how to do any of those things, to now living on your own.
Sure.
And having to prove yourself that you can stand on your own two feet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one of the big reasons why failing songwriting and failing, you know, that thing was not an option for me.
I love that. That is such a driving force, is that proving yourself.
Yes.
And I think as in going into a creative job or field or whatever it is, people just doubt you.
Yep.
From the beginning. Like, they're like, okay, you're really going to go and be like a singer or an actress or a whatever. Like, okay, good luck, you know?
How's that songwriting thing working out?
Yeah, right? and then as soon as you actually, that I got to prove myself, that was something for me too. In the opposite way of, I came from a musical family, and like my dad being like a really successful producer, artist, whole bit, whatever. And I needed to prove myself in the other way. Of like, I'm not just a daughter of someone who's successful. Like, I'm my own bitch.
Totally.
And like,
understand.
And I like wanted to prove myself. And that was such a big driving force for me.
Yeah.
It's those so things, true.
Those things are the things that literally just like launch you back. So I was like, look, I know how to do my laundry. I know how to. Like, I was I'm going to be an adult. Baby.
So then you're just.
I know how to do my laundry.
I mean,
but I still kind of barely know.
I know, literally.
I was like, no, what I told my parents.
I put my dishes in the dishwasher.
I basically came to the conclusion. I was like, look, if I work my ass off, I won't have to be doing my laundry. Like, that's what we're gonna have to
boom,
keep
boom.
It there.
So from there, you're writing your studio. You're in the studio. You're hustling in that end. And then what kind of was a moment where you were like, okay, like this is, was it like a first cut of some sort? Was it a working with an artist moment? Like, what was the moment where you're like, okay, this is what I'm doing?
Well, probably like, I don't know, like 18, 19, things started to actually pick up. So like after a while going to Brandon's Way, which is Kenny's studio, like literally I would run into Oak and Pop and I would run into Miley Cyrus and like all these people that would go in there, right? And the slow reassurance that maybe you might know like what you're doing a little bit, and the slow reassurance that you're getting better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're getting better as a writer, you're getting more consistent. And then I made it a goal, like, how efficient and how consistent can you be? And then I went on this thing of like just like three sessions a day and just being like out learning, student. It wasn't a thing of like getting the numbers down. It didn't really matter that. It's just how efficient can you make yourself? Like almost like a little robot, like a little songwriting robot. Like, and it's it was like, I was like, I have so much catching up to do. All of these people know each other. You know right. what I'm saying? I have to co-write and learn as much as possible because I'm also very young. And that was one of the things that when I, around that time I was learning, what is a publishing deal? Mm-hmm. What are all of these things? And I knew that I wanted to write for, you know, artists that were older than me. So what experience do you have?
Right.
You know? And that was something that when I signed to Big John, he was like, you know, you want to write for these artists that are older than you and you're 18. You know, you're 18, right, like, you're 19 or whatever. And so you're really going to have to be a student. And yeah. so I think that I just started to be on this journey to be like, I want to listen to every conversation. I want to sing every melody. I want to go through every single genre of music and see what I can add to this. Mm-hmm. Because I have a lot of incredible friends, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of incredible peers. What do I add?
I love that.
To this,
you and know? I think surrounding yourself with people that are not better than you, but more yes. experience, learning like from people that have done it for years.
It's
like,
necessary.
It's so necessary.
It's necessary. So basically, I finally got like my first little cut, and it was this record that I produced and wrote called Call Me Crazy, and I co-produced it with Dim Joints, and it was for Seven Streeter, who was Chris Brown's artist, and it was like, okay, I'm getting my, I got me a placement, baby.
Right,
like,
right.
It was like, I got a placement, you know,
<That's>
and
amazing.
Going back to like, if I never just wanted like, you know, I was obviously being like, oh, I want a single, you know, all of this stuff, but if I,
it's gotta start somewhere.
Going back yep. to what we were saying was a thorn of striving for the, if you never wanted the single, then you would have never got the album cut.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So, I basically was just like learning all of this like whirlwind of stuff and like learning a lot of business along the way too. And that thing that I was going to college for kept kind of coming back. Like I tried to have a manager and then it'd be like, you suck. Mm-hmm. Like, and then that forced me to get good at it myself. And then mm-hmm. realizing that, man, most of my fucking friends' managers, they say that they suck. Like they don't, mm-hmm. most people don't like they can't find one.
That's what people always come to me. They're like, hey, so I'm thinking about, you know, getting rid of my manager and finding a new manager. Who do you like? And
right.
I'm like, listen, the only time I ever hear people talk about their managers is when they're complaining about them. No one ever walks
totally.
Whoever walks into a session, you're like, guys, my manager just brought me. No one ever does that. Like, that's so classless if you did it in the first place, but no one ever does that. The only time I ever hear about managers is when they're not doing something right.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I always tell people, I'm like, I could tell you which ones I hear the least shit talked about.
Yes.
Right. Oh,
exactly. My God.
These poor managers.
Exactly.
And same thing with publishers, though, too.
It is yeah. very
No one
true.
Ever walks in the room and you're like, you guys, my publisher hooked me up with the craziest. No, like, no
so
one
true.
Ever says that.
Facts.
It's always like, my publisher doesn't do shit for me. Right?
Exactly.
It's always that, right?
Literally.
It's never a positive thing.
It's very, 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 very true. Most of the times it's that. So
yeah.
I'm like, look, I've been hearing all these years that, you know, creatives are dumb and that they're not, that they're actually, eventually the songwriting became easy and the thing that became exciting was the business and tying them both together. You know what I'm saying? Because I realized the more that I was good at my business, the more they were like a little bit like on edge. Like, who does this little girl think she is, you know?
I love
and
this.
So now I'm like, okay, it started to become a really, really fun thing of really saying like, okay, what is A&R? Like, what is an executive? And who's cutting my check? And
right.
who's cutting the person that's cutting my check?
Right.
And that started to become like really, really fun alongside creating the music, you
so
know?
Smart.
But
it's,
I can control my placements more if I'm not knowledgeable about
right.
business.
Yeah.
I don't have to feel like a fish out of water because I can say,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter if you take my song or not because I'm the driving person behind this and
yeah.
nobody will care for your career more than you do. So that's my only thing
Amen.
With, the, you know, whether it's an, with, I don't even blame, you know, publishers or managers or anything stuff because
mm-hmm.
they'll never care about it like you do.
Of
yeah.
course.
You
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They should be concerned.
You got to be in the you business for
you
sure.
You got to, exactly. You know, and everybody else just, you know, follows along the way.
You know, it's so interesting. There's a lot of creatives that listen to us and,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of creatives in LA. And I think that there are people out there like Taylor
mm-hmm.
who are learning how the game works.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Not just being a player in the game, but also being a coach and an owner at the
yes.
same time.
Yes.
You know
yes.
what I mean? And so I feel like if you are not being a student of the game,
mm-hmm.
of how the business side works, if you're not constantly growing and learning of how the industry shifting with technology and with all the different trends that are happening, and you're also being a creative, it's like you're kind of behind.
Yeah, completely.
Because you're like, I want to be at a certain level, but it's like, are you really doing everything you need to be doing in mm-hmm. order to be at that level? It's
exactly.
not just about being great in the room, and it's not just about writing a hit song. Mm-hmm. If you don't know how to get paid after you write a hit song, then yeah. what was the fucking point?
Yeah. Exactly, because you're not going to be driven to do it if you continue mm-hmm. to work, and you see no change, no reward.
What are you doing?
You're going to shoot yourself in the foot.
How do you evolve as a business person as well as a creative?
You really inspired me, Taylor, when you put on your camp in New York, Burnout, a few months ago, and I was there, and you inspired me, and I called Evan after, and I said, I would love to do this thing where, and obviously love you involved and everyone yeah. we can get involved, but I'd love to do this thing where we do kind of like, I don't know what it is, like a seminar or a panel or mm-hmm. something where we invite young creatives, songwriters, whatever, and just kind of give them the like 101 on like,
yes.
what does publishing mean? What is a royalty?
Mm-hmm.
What should your manager be taking from you?
Yes.
What should you get out of a lawyer? Like all these things that nobody teaches us, you know? And like, mm-hmm. it's so inspiring to hear you talk like that because it is our fucking life and our business. And
yes.
like, why wouldn't we be taking it into our own hands, you know? And
yeah.
I have a lot of songwriter friends, and I'm seeing them just rely so much on everybody else, their managers, their publishers, and getting disappointed and the expectations and not making any money and they're broke. And it's just like,
let me tell you something. If you are literally given, not including the taxes, if you get your check and you're giving a manager 20%, your business manager 5%, your lawyer 5%,
yeah.
and you're in a co-pub deal.
Yeah, you're fucked. You make no money. No, it's insane. No, it's insane.
Like, what? Like, it's the thing of just being like, yo, like, let's be real about here. And then you start to look. Now, when you really look down, how much that you're giving away, almost half of your money, almost. Like, not quite, but you're getting up there. You
yep.
know what I'm saying? Just based off of those three people, right?
Yep.
And so then you start to realize, I want to make sure these motherfuckers is doing their job
well,
and
if
working.
In a co-pub deal, you're already giving away half of your money, more than half of your money, because you're taking an admin
exactly.
fee on top. So
exactly.
You're already giving half of 90%
on
away.
That.
So you're getting 45% already, and then everybody's commissioning on that.
Exactly.
And I feel like these...
Sorry, I don't mean everybody else is going to have a thorn listening to us right now.
No. Well, it's the truth,
We've all been there, and that's why we can have those conversations, though, and
yeah.
say, hey, look, you know, what my thing is, for me, TP, like when I'm long gone and out of here, what I want to last is smarter creatives. Like I need to stand up for that. I need to, you know, have these conversations on podcasts like this
mm-hmm.
with creatives like you, because
mm-hmm.
you are some of the smart creatives. And if we start now, this can become a trend.
Absolutely.
You know, whether it takes 5 years or 10 years, it's necessary, or else they'll just figure out some AI computer to write it, and then we'll all be just
exactly.
They're figuring that out. Anyway.
Yes, exactly.
So we might as well get our fucking money
now.
I went to a lecture recently. This guy Shelley Palmer spoke, and he's got this amazing website where he talks about all this stuff, and he said people are scared, especially in the creative world, that people are scared, well, in all worlds, that AI is coming to take your job. He said it's not about fighting AI,
mm-hmm.
saying no to it, and it's not about AI gonna come take your job. The future, the people who run the future and rule in the future, are people who know how to work with AI.
Yeah.
And people who know how to use AI to better what they're doing and not being afraid of that. But he did talk a lot about how there are a lot of programs being created
yeah.
that are going to be writing songs, writing compositions.
They've been trying to do it. Starting with Master Writer. Like, that was
yeah.
the first thing that was like, huh, you don't think that they were using some of those analytics to create this AI? We are feeding it. We're feeding
uh-huh.
it with our,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
you know, but fuck it. Like, work with it. Be
yeah.
one of the things that helps feed it.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you balance all of these creative passions? Like, you do so many different things. How do you balance them?
Facts. I don't know. Sometimes I think burnout was the reason, was how I realized that I was balancing, right? So I wake up every single day, and because I have all of these sources of creativity, I really feel like I have the power. You know, I can say no to anything I want to, because guess what? I have six other things that I'll be fine either way.
Love that.
Right? I think I've given myself an opportunity to be free. You know, now you never want to half-ass a bunch of shit either, but that's also, it's never me alone. It's me being the director and I'm putting the proper people there to make sure that all of these things can run. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And building out these companies, building out these publishing companies, building out these labels and doing that. None of them are done by one person, but it takes a visionary. It takes somebody who can see it from up here and say, look, I wake up every day and if I don't feel like writing a song, then I'll go write a script. Mm-hmm. If I don't feel like doing that, then I'll go do voiceover on somebody else's script, but I'm at least giving myself the freedom to say no. If I ever not want to, I'm giving myself the freedom to grow in other worlds, because guess what? I thought that I was going to be a bigger actress, right? And if I didn't have the acting, and if I didn't have all of those other things, then I've just learned from the history of how my life has panned out that they all just are building blocks for each other.
I love that.
You know, they're all building blocks. The things that I was able to learn in, you know, the acting and all of those worlds and having my agent, now I can bring all of my songwriter friends in to write those soundtracks. Now I can bring all of those people that the artists that I'm working with back to those, to these soundtracks that I'm being a part of. Like, there's so many different ways that now I'm just creating an ecosystem around myself. And if I'm ever overwhelmed, then that means that I need to have more people in place to help that.
So,
you know?
So a big thing for you is, I heard two things. The first of all, the freedom to say no is just,
it's so powerful.
It's everything. And it's so powerful. And it's standing up for yourself and being like, you know what? That's not for me. I'm going to put my energy somewhere else.
Yes.
My energy is precious and that's where I'm going to put it. And the other thing is collaboration and team.
Yes.
Team building. Like, you bring in people around you and you have the resources now to bring in people to help you stay balanced. And
yes.
I think that that's true even on a small scale of like, oh, I have Evan and Taylor and all these friends that are so creative and dope, and I'm going to have them come in on this project because it just is going to keep me balanced and I'm not going to outdo myself, and we can live in a balanced like space together.
Exactly. I don't need to say I wrote the song by myself. I don't give a fuck. I'd rather say, you know what? I don't have time to do all this shit by myself. But you know what? I can get four placements if I bring in my friends on this and say, hey, we do this. And even more importantly than that, when I look to my left and my right, I can say I actually did it with people that I enjoyed doing it with.
That's
and now
dope.
I'm in the control to be able to at least affect that to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
So I might as well.
And I think burnout, your camp that you did was such an incredible concept, because it was all about how much we like burn out and how we're doing these double sessions, or we have all these projects and we're running around and we're burning out and we don't find the balance, and then our work suffers. So in your camp, we were learning about meditation and aromatherapy and Tai Chi and all of these sort of things that sort of bring our spiritual selves back into balance.
Were you teaching at the camp?
No, I was just, I was learning.
Did you learn
anything?
I was
a student.
You were?
So, yeah, so much. And I just, the concept of it, I was like, this is what we need. We don't need to go to these camps and be like, burned to the
Puddle
ground.
To the metal. Exactly.
Yeah, like from 11 to her, and we need this and that. And we're burned out, literally.
Yeah. No,
like,
no, I feel you.
This was like a dope concept. And me and Evan, too, we did a camp at the end of the year once, and it was just like, this is the end of the year. Like, let's not worry about who's looking for what, or let's just have fun and like write songs that are fun and like funny and be free, you know? Yeah. And it's so important as a creative to keep that flame
totally
burning.
Have fun. Do some things you wouldn't typically do. Just whatever you do, don't be in the studio all day.
Exactly.
Again, going back to having the option to do something. They were like, look, we ain't been in the studio yet. And I'm like, this is good, because you're going to be excited.
Yeah.
Because we had done breakfast. We had done boom. We had all of these other things. You were living life.
Yes.
Outside of the studio. That's the only way I'm able to balance all this stuff, because my eyes be like, ooh, let me try this. Let me do this little adventure. I baked a cake the other day. I'm like,
yes.
I'm like living my best life.
Yep.
That's how you balance it.
Do you think early on when you were doing three sessions a day?
No, I had to learn, because here's the kicker. Probably when I turned 22 or 23, I realized, I was like, oh, I know what I do and I don't know who I am. Like, I know what I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that I am an entertainer.
That's big T.
And it's like, I've been working since I was 9 years old.
Yeah, you've had like a lifetime already.
You know what I'm saying? 22, I'm like sitting in my apartment, you know, with my dogs. And like with one of the dogs that I bought, like she was like one of the first things I ever bought with my hairspray check. Like a dog, little Bella, you know Bella.
Oh, Bella.
But I'm sitting here and I'm looking around and I'm like, yo, I've now gotten, you know, the placements, I've gotten the Grammy nominations, I've gotten those things, and there's still a few more things to be done. But then
who are you?
Who the fuck am I?
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? And that these past few years, which is also, I think, why I started to do my artistry, because of the fact that I was like, you know what? Let's really dive in deep, the same way that you do with these other artists. Let's really put the mirror up. And that was the perfect time to, like, really start, like, you know, with TaylorMade.
Your
and
then
with the
project.
Album, with the album, We Need to Talk. Mm-hmm. And it was like a kind of We Need to Talk, me face to face with myself. Mm-hmm. And also We Need to Talk about some of the other things that, like, if I'm going through it, everybody else must be too.
Love that.
You know? And so, yeah, 22 is like when I had that moment of, yo, I need to live my life. Mm-hmm. And the past few years have been about, let's see what falling in love feels like. Let's see what falling out of love feels like. Mm-hmm. Let's see what living for more than your career feels like, because you're too young to, like, have to do that. But also, it's like, okay, when I have the rest of my life to live my best life. So mm-hmm. we got that workaholic kind of thing out of the way. And mm-hmm. I know what I value a little bit more now.
It's so true. We talk about it a lot, just being, like, a creative, defining your life by your quote-unquote job. It's, like, so easy when it's a creative job because you're living it 24/7.
Yeah, you're having so much fun.
Yeah, so you're like, oh, wait, I'm not my work.
Yeah.
You know, I'm, like, a separate human being exactly. outside of that. So that's really amazing to hear.
And when you start doing those things like burnout, like how silly you feel like when you're doing, like, you know, your Tai Chi or whatever, all of these things, and mm-hmm. getting yourself out of your comfort zone, you don't realize how much that adds to your music.
Totally.
And, like, meeting all these strangers and stuff like that. And I realized, like, oh, I'm forgetting that the music starts everywhere but in the studio. It starts with the conversations you have and the experiences you have. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not having them, then what the fuck am I writing about? And if I can't write what is going on with the world because mm-hmm. I'm not in it, mm-hmm. how do you write the most successful song that the world can relate to?
Right.
If you're not in it.
If you're not living. It's such tea.
Well, I mean, I don't know if there are any others, but are there other creative dreams that you have? Are there things that you're not doing that you wish you were doing?
I think it's right now it's just a matter of evolving what's going on now. Like, it's just in the start of the, you know, the pub side, and really boosting up my writers and my producers.
Building your empire.
You have your own writers and producers. Yeah. You have your own artist career.
Yep.
You're a songwriter.
Yep.
You're producing.
Yep. Creative direction.
Creative direction.
I put together Lil Nas X's styling team around him, which is really awesome to do because, sick. Like, it's just different than, like, what I do for myself. So, literally, like...
I mean, you've done musical theater, right? You've done TV and film. It's like...
You have to go back to college and get your...
Oh, that's it.
Boom,
boom. That's it.
Yes.
You're going to go get your law degree.
I definitely am going to do that.
Oh, I love that.
When I
Sarah,
bring it up,
that was awesome.
That was the one.
Literally.
It's so true.
Literally, you being able to do your own, like, contracts and shit. Can you imagine? But
my friend's about to be calling me in, like, Taylor, I'm going to be like, bitch.
Oh, my God.
Like, you're like, that's $1,000 an hour.
Right? I'm like, guess who my lawyer is now, honey? So, before we move into our next segment, just tell us how you felt when you heard the Grammy nominations for these coming Grammys. Because you're nominated for, like, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, there's a hoopla in there. And
it's so dope, Taylor. I'm so fucking happy for you.
Thank you so much, man. My mom came in with, like, my favorite bottle of champagne at, like, 6 a.m, like, woke me up, like, came into my house, like, planned it with my assistant.
Naturally, 6 a.m.
Yeah, it was like, that's what it was. It was,
well,
like,
that's when the announcements are. So,
exactly.
Right?
So, and so we were literally just like, I was just like, like, let me roll up.
Hell yeah. Oh, my God.
I was really, really thankful because every year, the first time I went to the Grammys, it was my mom called into a radio station and told these people, like, my daughter's going to be doing music and, you know, we want tickets to the Grammys. And we won, you know? And then
we
were sitting way up in, like, the top and I was like, I want to be down there.
Aww.
And then years later, I'd be a little closer and then a little closer. Last year, we were on the floor. I brought my mom with me. And this time, well, it'll be another
stage,
step.
Honey.
You know?
Exactly. On the stage.
Yes.
What's your hair? What's your look? I need to know all of it.
Girl,
we don't know yet.
I'm so excited. We don't know yet.
We have a lot to think about.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, you got to think about your hair.
Man.
This is a big decision.
I know. I'm like, look, because it's going to affect everything.
Fuck.
So we talked about this a little earlier. You had started to dive into your you do on a daily basis. Mm. Sarah and I talk a lot about spirituality and having a spiritual practice as a means to balance us so we can connect and be inspired every day. It's something that we like to call the daily.
The daily.
So
I'm blown back by this production. Like, I'm just like, I am.
Live and direct.
Yeah, it is. It's all live, baby. So, okay, the daily. So what are your daily routines? Do you have anything that you do every single day? Is it an exercise? Is it a meditation? Is it breathing? Is it smoking a joint? Whatever it is, like, is there something that just connects you to, you know, I don't know, your spiritual self, God, creativity, whatever you want to call it. Do you have a routine?
It's a series of things. I guess it depends on what I feel like I'm lacking at that moment. So sometimes if I'm like, you know what, you need to remind yourself to breathe, I literally will make it a habit that week or that month or that whatever. But one thing that I do all the time is I hang out with my dogs. And definitely, you know, I smoke me a J, like, and just kind of just chill.
That's just dogs. But
like my
dogs,
Apollo and Bella, you know, something that I do all the time. Like, it gives me something to care about other than myself.
Yeah.
It gives me something to, you know, just some unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And we just chill, you know, like me and my dogs.
I love it.
And then another thing is, like, I have this little kind of tray that I have next to my couch, and it has my Palo Santos, and it has, you know, all of my sage. It has all of those things because I'm into aromatherapy. And I just, like, I have all of my little gadgets, things that, you know, I included in burnout that I felt like were important, or that different that light does to you. I have Hue lighting bulbs.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, whatever you need in that moment. I feel like there's so many tools that you can use. But my Hue lights, and changing the whole vibe if I need to.
It's so true.
Aromatherapy and just connection to animals.
Oh, it's so true. I'm like the same exact thing. Like, if I need dog time almost every day, just like looking in their faces and they're just unconditional love. They bring you back to like, this is what matters, you know?
Yes.
Do you do anything before you go into a creative environment? Is there anything, do you have like any rituals or anything that you do to center yourself or get yourself ready to be creative?
I think I just kind of, like, that's one of the things that I just allow to be free. Like, whatever. I like the idea of throwing myself into an uncomfortable situation, which is probably why I've never been the one to, like, do week-long sessions with people. Or, like, 3 days, I'm like, I feel like I'm in a relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I start getting real antsy. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think that I like the kind of adventure of, like, throwing yourself into something and you have to make it work no matter what.
Right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? And being that person. So if I'm in a room with somebody who is preparing myself, like, if I'm in a room with somebody who is, you know, faster than me at a top line, or is that's more, you know, more dominant than me, okay, then I chill. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Or being able to be the one that takes it to the finish line if necessary. Just kind of getting ready to say, like, it's really emotionally draining, you know? And I think more so after those sessions and being depleted and making sure that I refuel myself is more important than, like, before I'm going in outside of the everyday care that you do give yourself, you know?
Yeah.
But like after, you know, you're so depleted that that's the moment that I'm like, okay, what do we do? What can I do to refill myself? What can I do to give myself that love that I just gave that person? What can I do to just nurture myself, you know?
It's such an important thing for songwriters, but creatives, like that protecting our energy.
Yes.
Because we go into these scenarios every day with new people, new energies, everyone's spitting out ideas, there's egos to deal with, there's all kinds of different energies, and you don't know how much you're being drained. And I think even if it's like you were saying, Evan, like just go home and sage yourself.
Yes.
Or go home and take like 3 deep breaths or do something where you're just refueling or else like back to your camp where burn the fuck out. Yeah. It's so important. And you don't realize, too, for me, I'm an empath, so I like to take on everything.
I think we all are.
We all are, for sure.
Yes, definitely.
But even sometimes I'll find myself in a mood or in a weird space.
You don't even know why.
And it's not even me.
It's somebody else.
Yeah.
All the time.
And it's, you have
to. It's crazy. And then realize, trying to distinguish that it's not you.
Exactly.
Now that's the part, because that it's just like, oh, going back to like differentiating between who you are and what you do. But that's something that comes so naturally, like being an empath, like, which is why it's super important to realize just how much you're giving and the power behind songwriting, because people don't, I don't think that they understand that you are literally being somebody's therapist.
Yeah.
Like, I'm unpacking emotions that your mama probably don't want to hear about right now. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, your best friend is tired of hearing. Your fucking brother and sister, like, are too used to you. Like, it's, you're having to do that, you know, and you don't realize how emotional, it's a very selfless job.
Very.
So when you have a job that is selfless, you have to take care of yourself, too.
Boom, motherfucking boom. That's what I'm saying. That is tea.
Awesome. So, Taylor, we end each episode with a segment that we call Golden Nuggets.
Golden Nuggets.
Sarah, what are Golden Nuggets?
Golden Nuggets is a segment where Evan, myself, and our guest are each asked to bring in or recommend to our listeners something that inspires us spiritually and helps our creative process, quiets our mind, fosters our growth, etc. A tool that we love to utilize in connecting with our creative self. It can be a book, a meditation, a workout, a crystal, a poem, a movie, anything that just inspires you. So we can start with my golden nugget. My golden nugget today is, and I've talked about it before on this podcast, but it is my tarot reader and teacher, Naha, and her space downtown.
We love Naha.
It's called 22 Teachings. It's downtown LA. Mm. And it's just the most magical place. And she does classes. And it's like a mystery school, basically. She does like classes, tarot readings, healings, like all kinds of different activities. Like, she has incredible books there, incense, candles. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just the dopest place. And she's such an incredible woman and always just like expanding her business, and it's all about just healing. Mm-hmm. And for me, she, I mean, I have therapists I've been going to forever since I was like 13, which is crazy, but
damn, she know you well.
Literally, she, I always think about, should I change? And I'm like, who's gonna fucking know? Like you know? Mm-mm. But anyways, but Naha is literally like kind of my other therapist, like my spiritual therapist in a way, you know? And I always go to her when I'm going through something, and it's just a magical place. And I, and so that's my golden nugget, is that place and just bringing in that other side of like quote unquote therapy, like a spiritual teacher, healing, readings, those kind of things. Like, I don't know. It
can,
helps me.
Can anybody go see Naha?
Yeah.
It's like appointment only kind of thing?
Or yeah,
like,
you have to call and make an appointment. But yeah, she does readings and healings at 22 Teachings downtown.
And does she teach? Anybody can take classes from her?
Yeah, she does. That's how I learned to read the tarot. I took her classes. And
I just didn't know if it was like a referral thing or anybody can do
it. Anybody can go.
Boom, boom.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Naha, everybody go see Naha. Get on Sarah's level.
She's a real, she's a game changer.
I got to say, Sarah has read me before. Has read me? Is that like the actual thing that you would say?
Yeah.
You've been read.
I've been read.
Read you for filth, honey. That's what I say. Okay.
Sarah has read me before, and it's amazing. So, you know, I guess.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like, kudos to you, but also thanks to Naha.
Yeah. She taught me it all, so.
Yeah. People are always like, Sarah, when are you going to do a reading? When are you going to do a reading? Yes.
It is. I feel very like, that's one of my other passions besides songwriting and art, being, you know, a musician, whatever, is doing tarot readings.
So my golden nugget is basically the philosophy of living in day-tide compartments. And if you don't know what that is, it came from a book this guy Dale Carnegie wrote. This guy Dale Carnegie wrote a book that a lot of people know, which is called How to Win Friends and Influence People. But he wrote a second book that's called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And it basically deals with the concepts of reducing worrying and anxiety and really just living your life. In the opening of it, and becomes the theme of the whole book, is this philosophy of living in day-tight compartments. And it's basically...
What is it? Day-tight
compartments.
Day-tight compartments.
Right? So, okay. Like, the compartment itself is just today. The walls, the ceiling, the floor, it's today. You can't see through the walls to yesterday. You can't see through the walls to tomorrow. You can't feel, you can't hear. All that matters is what you're doing in front of you today. It's a constant reminder to live in the present, and it reduces the anxiety and the worry of things that maybe you did in the past or things that you're concerned about in the future. And it really just focuses you to be in the moment. I think as a creative, we tend to go into sessions and we bring this baggage with us, whether it's baggage of the future or baggage of the past. And it gets in the way of us really fully realizing ourselves as a creative in those sessions, and those creative opportunities that we have sometimes get ruined because we're letting other outside things influence them, right? Or at least stopping us from fully connecting to whatever we need to be connecting to. So for me, just as a daily reminder, I try to remind myself, today I'm just living in a day-type compartment. Now, that doesn't mean that I shouldn't be planning for the future. Because sometimes I talk about this and people are like, yeah, but then if you're only living about now, what about the future? To me, it's not about that. You should plan for the future. You should have plans. You should have these, you know, goals and things you want to hit. But in order to get there, you really need to do what's in front of you, you know, one foot in front of the other, you know.
So love that.
The concept for me is day-type compartments. And, you know, the Dale Carnegie book, I guess, could also be the golden nugget in itself. But just really the specific concept of day-type compartments.
And where can people like read about that? Or
I mean, you could probably just Google about literally day-type compartments, but you can buy the book, the Dale Carnegie book, on Amazon, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living.
Wow.
Is the name of the book.
I love that.
And the other book, his first book is obviously really popular, which is the How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yeah.
That's like a popular book.
I love that.
And it's just really helped me when I want to be creative, is to just leave all the baggage at the door.
Come back to the moment.
Check it at the door. Just be in the moment. Be there. Be of service to the other people in the room that you're creating with. Be of service to the song. Be of service to the artist. And get out of your head.
Love that.
Yeah.
That's dope.
That's my nug.
Love your nug.
I love your nug.
Taylor, what's your golden nugget?
My little book of mindfulness, which my little sister got me, and is basically like a book about gratitude.
And that's
like
what
a little
called?
Baby book. Yeah, it's like small, and I love little miniature things. So,
aww, like very miniature.
Yeah, like it's next to my like you know sage and everything. And then also I have this app called Fabulous, and it's literally like a routine building app. Ooh. So basically, like it helps you make things into habits. So like right, like it's starts off like the first day was just like, how about just making drinking water at the moment that you get out of bed a habit, right? And so every day that you do it, it suggests it, and then you like click it off, and you can add all of these other habits until you eventually have a routine. So it's like, okay, at this time you drink the water, and this time you blah 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 blah.
That is so dope.
This time you have to tell it. You have to tell it.
It'll suggest it in the beginning. It'll suggest these are habits that probably everybody should do. You know what I'm saying? Maybe stretch when you get to it. Like it'll have a morning routine, an afternoon routine, and routine. An evening routine, which is a little tough because our schedule, our lives aren't, you know, are hard to schedule around. But it even if you do it at another pace, you could just check it off. Like if I'm in the car, and one of my habits that I'm trying to learn is just taking some breaths in the afternoon. You know what I'm saying? And a recenter, like probably around, you know, 3 or something like that after I've gotten out of, I've been having like sessions at like 10 in the morning these past like week. So around that time. I know.
No.
So I'm
that's
like around.
No me, dog.
I know. But they'll be quick.
Good for you.
They'll be quick. And then so then I'm like, okay, around this time, I just need to make sure I check in with myself and breathe.
Yeah.
So it just reminds you of all these things or stretch or like
this
things.
Is like a daily routine app.
It's called
this.
Fabulous.
Fabulous. Oh.
Yes.
Oh, I'm getting this.
Hell yeah. That's one of the best golden nuggets I've heard, actually. I think I'm going to get it.
There's a lot of cool like apps, you know. There's Calm.
Yeah,
there's,
we've talked about Calm on here.
Calm, Headspace. You know,
Headspace is the other one that I was just going to say.
About Calm.
This is a good one to use in conjunction with Headspace.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Man, that's amazing.
Amazing.
Well, thank you, Taylor. Thank you for being our guest and for letting us into your creative journey and spiritual process.
Thank you.
Where can everyone find you online if they want to follow what you're up to?
At Taylor Parks, TaylaParx.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Everywhere. Are you
everywhere.
On every social?
Everywhere.
You can find us at writetothesourcepodcast.com or on our Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Write to the Source. We'll have all of our guests' daily routines and golden nuggets up on our website if you want to check them out and see if they inspire you. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through our website. Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any platform that you listen to podcasts on.
Taylor, as you know, we talked about a little, I read tarot cards, but at the end of the episode, I always, well, before the episode, I pull a tarot card that gives me like the essence of our guest. Mm-hmm. And for you, I pulled the Three of Cups because basically what the Three of Cups is about is collaboration, which I think, and we talked about in this episode, and team building, which is something you're so amazing at. And you make everyone around you feel good and included, and that we can be a team and we can do this together. And that card is all about just collaborative efforts and building your team and building your empire and having joy. And you're so joyful to me. And every time I'm around you, I just feel this joy.
Thank you, man.
And cups are all about emotions. And in this card, they're celebrating their emotions and they're celebrating being an emotional being and having that be a part of your journey in life. And it just like screamed Taylor to me, my TT.
I'm here for this.
So that's your card, and you could take it with you too.
This is mine.
Put that on your little
party
altar.
Favor.
Yes, I will put it on my altar.
Put it on your altar.
Yes.
Taylor, thank you so much for being our incredible guest.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun. Literally between the production of it all, between you guys' like faces and like just being able to just hang out with you guys, this was honestly one of the greatest ever.
Thank you. It was so inspiring to hear your thoughts on everything, and just the best. And everyone who's listening, don't forget, when you're being creative and you want to connect,
let it go, and let's go right to the source.